broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Without warning, he fired us, you know, and there was a bunch of employees that he fired. He brought his own employees from Texas, you know, and I've worked this job with
NASCAR, Juan Pablo Montoya. You know, he's one of the best drivers in NASCAR.
We get studies that say yes and studies that say no, and we sort of have to work through which are the best.
As we've gone through this process, I've concluded.
Lesbian, your mom's a lesbian.
Well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show where truth is our bitch, and this show, the groundbreaking world-famous Phil Hendry Show, takes you directly to the truth in some very interesting ways, and we do it each and every night. We're very grateful that you are with us, and we'd like to mention right off the bat, before we commence with anything, we are starting tonight on a couple of affiliates we've already mentioned on the air, WROW in Albany on 590. We're so happy to be back on the air in Albany and back on the air in Reno as well at KKFT in Reno, KKFT 99.1 FM. That is awesome.
Yeah, they we used to get a lot of email from people over there.
They were drunk, but... Well, you don't have to mention that they're drunk.
Totally not to.
You mean they're drunk? We get email from a lot of people, and there's a lot of really nice people, and sometimes you get a squirrel mixed in. Don't worry about it.
I would say, to me, it seemed as if they was, you know, intoxicated.
Okay, fine. You know, save it, man. We'll get some laughs over it. Anyway, 877-876 is the number here in the Phil Hendry Show. Later on tonight, Art Griego joins us. He is a retired charter pilot to talk about this latest information about the Northwest flight where these two pilots were allegedly using their laptop computers. Perhaps they were... I don't know. The news, I think I heard that they were going over some vital data that was required of all pilots.
Well,
you don't know. We'll find out, okay? And then we also are going to be talking with Bobby Dooley of the Western Estates Parent Teachers Organization about the swine flu shot. And there was a disturbing video today that I saw. We posted over at Facebook of a young lady who got the swine flu shot. She was a cheerleader. And now she suffers from an extremely debilitating neurological disorder. Is it directly connected to the swine flu shot? We don't know. It was a syndrome that existed in her nervous system that some, and I'm not saying everyone, some think triggered the this malady that this poor child is suffering from. I mean, she's walking very strange.
Yeah, it's walking like she, you know, like Groucho Marx or something.
Get out of here, both of you guys.
She does.
Walking like Groucho Marx.
Well.
877-876-PHIL is our number. Join us on our website, too, at philhendryshow.com and check out a live streaming video of the show, as well as live streaming audio, as well as archives, as well as downloads, as well. Our website was named one of the funniest on the Internet by PC World. That's how proud we are of our website. NTSB, errant pilots were using laptops. All right, let's get into this one, man. Errant pilots were using laptops, according to the National Transportation and Safety Board. Now, two Northwest Airlines pilots told federal investigators they were going over schedules using their laptop computers in violation of company policy while their plane overflew their Minneapolis destination by about 150 miles, according to the NTSB people. The pilots, Richard Cole of Salem, Oregon, the first officer, and Timothy Cheney of Gig Harbor, Washington, the captain, said in interviews conducted over the weekend that they were not fatigued, they didn't fall asleep, according to this statement that they made. We're going to hear from these guys right now. These are the Northwest pilots. I think this is one of them. It's a very brief interview with Richard Cole. He denies napping but says he'll chat with the press next week. But first, he's got to be run through the ringer by the FAA and the NTSB, and by the end of that, he'll probably want to quit.
Nobody fell asleep. Nobody had an argument. Nobody had a fight. Other than that, I can't tell you anything. And I'd appreciate it if you guys would stop bothering me, okay? Yeah, I mean, I'm more than happy to tell you everything next week.
All right, here is Fox News' Steve Brown. He details the NTSB report on the incident.
What they say is in mid-flight, both pilots got out their laptops, the purpose of which, according to both of these pilots, was to go over new scheduling arrangements and procedures for the new merged Northwest Delta airline. Apparently, there was a lot of conversation going on. at some point, there was a knock at the door. The knock at the door was a flight attendant asking, hey, what's our ETA? When are we landing? When the pilots looked up from their laptops, according to the statement from the NTSB, they noticed they had already overshot MSP, or Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. It wasn't until they were over Eau Claire, Wisconsin, that they finally got the big bird turned around and then later landed.
And some pilots have said,
my butt would be raw
if that, you know, happened to them. But the fact of the matter is they, you know, landed the plane. And I wonder if we would have ever found out about this had the NTSB, the FAA, the airline, the airport, not done their due diligence and investigated. Because I'm still not clear whether the passengers knew anything about it. And I'm not saying it's cool, because you generally know when you're going to land a plane. The longer it takes to land an airplane, the more nervous I get. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah, that, if they're not going to land it, you'll think you're going to crash or something.
Well, I wouldn't say that, but I remember one time flying into LAX. I was coming back from Europe. So it was 11 hours we were in the air, and we were flying in from London. It had been a very nice flight. Not too bumpy, you know, not that I mind turbulence. I mean, that's part of life. But, I was tired. Everybody was tired. It's an 11-hour flight. You're flying that long. You want to get the hell off the plane. Speaking of that, by the way, I just got done reading that Eichmann Hunted book. Yeah, it's a World War II book. But those guys were in the air something like 15 hours trying to get that scumbag out of Argentina. And they were flying a prop job. And that was just 15 hours from Argentina over to Africa. Then they had another 8 hours up to Israel. And from Israel, it probably seemed like forever before they get off the plane. Anyway, I don't know why I...
Has that got to do with anything, man?
Yeah, it's way off point.
All right, it's off point. Anyway, I'm sorry. So we're flying into LAX. That's what I get for reading a book about a year after it comes out. We're flying into LAX, and everything's beautiful, you know, and the pilot in the air, and the flight attendant, she's, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be flying pretty, you know, landing soon, everything's good, you know, okay, great. This guy, and I swear to you, he couldn't have gotten more than 300 feet off the deck, and he powered it right back up again and flew right out over the Pacific Ocean and took it way out across downtown Los Angeles. And I'm telling you, everybody in the airplane is sweating buckets, okay? And the flight attendants don't know what's going on. And we go all the way out over, if you've flown into Los Angeles, you know that you have an ocean there. There's LAX, and then there's the Pacific Ocean. And we went out over the ocean, we curved it back in across the coastline, went right back toward downtown, circled over downtown LA, and made the second approach, and eventually landed. And I was sitting next to a guy who was a pilot, and the pilot of the aircraft came on and said, well, ladies and gentlemen, sorry, his visibility wasn't too good, so we thought we'd visibility. It was the most beautiful day you could imagine. And this guy next to me said, that ain't right. I said, what about the visibility? He said, well, you could see for yourself, man. You don't have to be Sky King to know it's a beautiful day. I said, fine. So I got off the plane convinced that we had almost, you know, that we had averted something on the ground. Because what happened in the years after at Los Angeles International Airport, at least twice, aircraft collided on the ground. One of them landing, or one taking off, or one taxiing in, and there's another guy, he's backing out, and he's not looking in the rearview mirror, and boom, you know. So I'm to this day, until somebody can, I wouldn't know, and maybe visibility to a pilot is different to a passenger, but We were almost on the ground. I mean, I'm looking at those runway lights. I'm looking at the, all the trucks and all the hangars, and this guy just powered it right back up. I remember looking over at my partner who I'd been in Europe with. We were doing broadcasts. Man, he was afraid of flying in the first place, and when we powered that thing back up,
What did he do? Did he pee?
Just about, yeah. I mean, he looked at me and he started lifting himself off the seat the way people do, you know, and I could see the sweat breaking out on his face. But it was pretty freaky for me. So, you know, you don't really know what's going on when you're back there. You're a passenger. And that's fine with me. I don't need to know. And the guy says to me that it's a visibility problem, and I'm looking out the window, and, I mean, you can see Catalina Island. But then as the years passed by and I saw these news stories about the pilots, aircraft at LAX, sometimes, you know, narrowly missing, sometimes land. One time in 89, one landed right on top of another plane. So I have decided in my own little pea brain that maybe that was something that was going on down there. They just saw something. He's not going to come on the radio.
Yeah, I was going to say, they're going to say nothing to people.
No, he's not going to come on the radio. He's not going to say, ladies and gentlemen, we just thought we'd swing it back around because we almost piled into another plane. Ladies and gentlemen, we thought we'd just swing it back around here because, well, on the ground there was a guy backing out, and if I had landed, I would have run it right into the back end of his ass, and he would have gone into the terminal, and it would have been pretty bad. So I thought I'd do that. So the NTSB and the FAA have weighed in. These guys were on their laptop computers, apparently going over some kind of professionally required paperwork, and they lost track of the time. And that's their story, and they're sticking to it, man. So we'll be hearing from Art Griego later on in the program. He's a retired charter pilot to talk to us about that. There's one other story here about cell phone usage. We also have Bobby Dooley about the flu. But we want to get into this story about cell phone usage. And the thing that is interesting to me is that with all of the concern about the swine flu shot and whether or not we ought to take it and whether or not this is just unnecessary panic and whether or not I really want to take something that's got mercury in it and whether or not, you know, maybe this is the Obama administration trying to control us again, guess what? Your cell phone ain't safe. Now, I wonder how many people are going to think that that's just the Obama administration, and I'm not saying that everyone say that, but it's some sort of governmental stricture to make sure that we ain't having the fun we should be having. How many people get a chance at and keep using their cell phone jammed up against their ear, you know, like it's a seashell? We'll find out that and more. Art Griego and Bobby Dooley. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Our website, philhenryshow.com, to check out live video and the downloads. And we got affiliates all over this marvelous Marvy place, including our brand new affiliates tonight, WROW in Albany on 590 AM and KKFT in Reno, Nevada, 99.1 FM. We'll be right back on the world-famous, groundbreaking Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and welcome back to the program. So we got the guys there in the airplane with their laptops. So that was a story that people were going a little cuckoo about. The other one is the cell phone usage linked to brain tumors. You know, a lot of times at night when we're planning the show, I'll say, well, what were the stories? And I think anybody would plan a show this way. What were the stories that really drew a lot of interest from people? And we're able to track that by way of different websites. Can track the most popular as opposed to the most viewed, as opposed to the most emailed. See, we're never really all that interested in the most viewed because we realize that the most viewed will be the ones that are on the front page. We're always interested in what's the most popular and the ones that people are exchanging with each other. And then we found out that there was one story today that was big above all other stories, which was amazing to me, and that was the one entitled...
My butt would be raw.
No, it was called...
What are you talking about, man?
It was called Cell Phone Usage Linked to Brain Tumors. Now, just a little, you know, humorous aside, a report by the World Health Organization shows that longtime cell phone users are at serious risk of brain tumor.
Man, that's got to be bullcrap.
I don't know, man. No, it ain't bullcrap. This is the World Health Organization. Maybe it's politically motivated. You know, these days, every time something happens, if there is a declaration about anything, we are thinking there's some nefarious motivation somewhere, some ulterior motive someplace. There can't just be, I mean, that may be true of a lot of marriages, you know, but not when it comes necessarily to just information. So it's the World Health Organization saying that longtime cell phone users are at risk of brain tumors. Now, this was, as you know, discussed, oh, I don't know, probably about 8-9 years ago originally. A $30 million decade-long study by the World Health Organization will suggest that heavy mobile phone usage will result in a brain tumor. It suggests that heavy mobile phone usage will result in a brain tumor or tumors. Now, that's a very interesting sentence, and this is why I want you guys to pay close attention. Will suggest. Now, that's a word that means something. Doesn't say it does, it says suggest. Then it goes on to say that heavy mobile phone usage will result. The preliminary results have linked cell phone usage to three different types of brain tumors, according to the Daily Express of London. The study of 12,800 people in 13 different countries will be released by the end of the year. The findings of the study will put international pressure on many governments to issue strong warnings to mobile phone users. Now, if we had mandatory health care insurance, you could use your cell phone as much as you wanted to. You could grow a brain tumor the size of a basketball, and you could go in, get it taken care of, or at least have yourself zipped into a plastic bag, and nobody be any the wiser.
That's cruel to say about that.
Why don't you just take a chill pill, man? I'm trying to give people the information with a little bit of
holy boo
levity here, okay? Last month, Pennsylvania Senator Arlen Specter held Senate hearings to examine health implications of talking on a cell phone because he'd been talking on one his whole life and he wasn't feeling too good. Anyway, he had these hearings, and several cell phone companies and organizations have claimed that using a handheld device is safe and would not lead to cancer. A Mobile Operators Association representative stated in UPI reports that 30 other scientific surveys have done and concluded that there is no evidence of health effects from cell phone usage. However, NBC News Channel 10 in New York suggests that these studies are inconclusive because cell phones have been around for only a short period of time. Head of the study, Dr. Elizabeth Curtis, said, according to the New York Post, in the absence of definitive results and in the light of a number of studies, which, though limited, suggest a possible effect of radio frequency radiation, precautions are important. She further iterated that children should be restricted, not banned from cell phone use. I would ban. I don't know what they mean by that. What they're saying is what I think they're saying, and the amount of cell phone usage that kids do, and although they do more texting than adults, and I read where they thought that texting was a lot healthier. So remember, guys, when you're driving out there, be sure to text. You don't want to get a brain tumor, huh?
Oh, it's big.
Now, here we have, let's see, this is Dr. Manny Alvarez of Fox News analyzing the implications of the study on kids who are... Why is it all of a sudden about kids, man? They said if you got the thing jammed up against your ear for 10 years, you may have one rocking and rolling inside your skull, too. Anyway, here he is talking about the implications of the study on kids who are currently using cells.
The best studies do show a link between cell phone use and cancer. And the biggest story here is not so much now you, me, using cell phones, whether to use a device, get it away from your head and all that, is the use of cell phones by children.
Hmm.
You know, if you multiply the exposure, you know, if you have a 10-year-old kid with a cell phone now that is going to be using it for 30 years of their lives, that is a big problem. And I think that the devices have to be looked at very much carefully.
Now, here is Dr. Cynthia Coomer of the Mount Sinai Medical Center telling Fox News this study doesn't mean we should just ban cell phones altogether.
We get studies that say yes and studies that say no, and we sort of have to work through which are the best studies and most convincing. This study is pretty convincing with almost 13,000 people in over 30 countries. And again, I think this is more a declaration of we have to be careful, we have to use this in moderation, but we don't have to avoid our cell phones altogether, which sometimes are actually very useful to us, especially in emergencies.
Now, this little kid had been using the cell phone for a while.
My head was shaking.
And that was all she said before they wheeled her in. I would say this, that there's a lot of equivocation going on here, isn't there? Well, I don't think that the cell phone, and of course we, however, it is important that you've... I would say that a brain tumor warrants my concern. Well, the kids shouldn't use it, but you know that the people... So what we're going to have to do is this. This is what we're going to have to do. We have to find out whether this study is, in point of fact, saying cell phone usage, very definite link to brain tumors, because that's what I think it's saying, and this is just a preliminary. We haven't seen it. The other thing, then, we must say is this. You people out there, whether you're a doctor or whether you're a cell phone company or whoever you are, telling us, well, you know, the kids are the ones that are at risk, you see, because the... You know, why don't you go home and take a nice warm bath and open up a big vein or something, man? You're not doing anybody any good.
Yeah, you just told them to commit suicide.
So what? If it's a brain tumor, Jack, that's serious. Don't tell me that, well, we just have to kind of back off. So which is it? Well, we don't know. So that means we're going to have to just sit and wait. So aren't you glad that I brought the news to you, huh? However, I will tell you this much. We have a political crisis at hand of sorts with this swine flu vaccine, right? Because there are some people who see the nefarious hand of the government in the swine flu vaccine. Some people who believe that this is just another move to control our lives, to make this into the totalitarian state that it isn't, that so many people wish that it was, and to elect...
I am a clown.
...this guy president. So here it is. If that's serious, then I would say the cell phone thing is serious. So if we shouldn't be, you know, getting the swine flu shot, man, maybe we ought to put up those cell phones for a while. See, none of this stuff I'm willing to believe until I get some more definitive proof. Period. And if I'm like that guy that got blown off of that Mount St. Helens.
What are you talking about, man? Who got blown? Who got blown?
I didn't say that, did I?
Off of Mount St. Helens.
Mount St. Helens. You don't remember that, huh?
No.
His name was Harry Truman. And they said, you better get off the mountain, Harry, because it's about to blow. And he said, you know, no way, I'm staying. I'm staying right where I am. And the next thing you knew...
Oh, it's big.
Harry got blown off the side of the mountain. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry Show. Steve Phillips fired by ESPN for screwing around. We'll be right back.
Phil Henry.
Oh, it's big.
Bobby Dooley coming up at the top of the next hour on the swine flu shot and the reluctance of so many to have this shot. And even though the swine flu shot, the numbers on side effects or a debilitating side effect or something catastrophic happening as a result of the swine flu shot, however you want to put that, the numbers are like a 1 in 1 million, 1 in 10 million. It's astronomical. And yet people will argue with you until... their deaths, until literally they pass out or die from starvation. They'll argue with you about this swine flu shot, right? Now we have information from the United States government, actually the World Health Organization. So this is not just the U.S. This is a whole bunch of doctors weighing in on this. After a 10-year study that says the use of cell phones may result in a brain tumor, right? Now, how many people are going to resist, you know, using their cell phones, even pressed up to their heads, though we have this information? How many people are going to take this seriously? How many people are going, I don't know, maybe a lot of people, maybe everybody. Maybe I know that I'm probably going to start using the speakerphone more, although the damage has been done with me, I can tell you that.
That's for sure.
But I will bet you any amount of money you want, that suddenly, when you're talking about people changing their daily life, a swine flu shot, it's easy to become skeptical and cynical about a swine flu shot because you don't really have to get one if you figure you're washing your hands and you're not touching anybody that you shouldn't touch and you're not grabbing yourself in any way that you shouldn't grab, and you're probably gonna be okay. And so people can be rather cavalier with the swine flu shot and say, well, you know, the government is trying to, and they're influencing these things with lives. Okay. Now you got something, the cell phone, which is something everybody uses every day, walking down the street, driving in their car, sitting in a movie theater, sitting in church, while they're getting married, while they're having sex, it doesn't matter. Kids, parents, everybody using the cell phone, and telling people you're going to have a brain tumor, possibly, from using your cell phone, one would think this is information that is going to be a life changer for a lot of people. You guys that own the Bluetooth company, whoever, I guess it's the same guys that own every other phone. Oh, man, is business going to get good for you? Maybe. People won't do without their cell phones. Forget it. It isn't going to happen. Even if you told them they were going to grow a tail. Even if you told them it would turn them into a vampire. Even if you told them it would turn them into a werewolf. With all of the, and not even half the fun a werewolf has. I'm telling you. They're going to be long, really hard-pressed to be giving up those cell phones. So, you see, the moral of the story is this. The moral of the story is the following thing. If we can afford to be cynical and cavalier and critical of an issue, then we will be. If we cannot, then we are not. So I'm telling you that when I listen to the American people screeching and yelling about certain things, having to do even with taxes, having to do even with war, it is because I think at the end of the day they feel that they got time, we can figure it out, everything's going to be okay. Obama ain't half the douchebag I claim he is. Bush, he's not half the douchebag I claim he is. This is just me out exercising my lungs. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, well, I'm still not going to get a Bluetooth.
Well, you go right ahead. Oh, that's right. You got a plate in your head.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. All right, 877-876-PHIL. Bob Greasy has used a racially insensitive term while discussing Juan Pablo Montoya. Who? Here is Bob Greasy, the Hall of Fame quarterback of the Miami Dolphins, now doing play-by-play for ESPN. Color commentary, he was sitting in the booth, they mentioned this driver, and Greasy came out with a taco joke, and then he had to apologize. Bob Greasy, he's about as inoffensive as they get.
As the chase hits the halfway point, Mark Martin and Jeff Gordon will look to close the gap on current points leader Jimmy Johnson as NASCAR's best. Head of the shortest track on the circuit, the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup continues at Martinsville with coverage beginning tomorrow on ABC at 1 Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, presented by Goodyear. Jimmy Johnson has won five of the last six races at Martinsville, by the way.
It's the first time we saw Jeff Gordon up there in the top five, isn't it? Where's Juan Pablo Montoya? He's out having a taco.
He's out having a taco.
Holy booze.
Well, that got him into trouble, so he had to do this.
NASCAR, Juan Pablo Montoya. You know, he's one of the best drivers in NASCAR. I just want to apologize for the comment that I made earlier in the ballgame.
Yeah, what else? Well, you know what, Bob?
Giant douche nozzle.
Anyway, Bob Greasy had to apologize for saying taco, out getting a taco, because people were upset with that. Hey, you know what? The business of broadcasting means you are in front of the audience, and if the audience in any great number complains, then you got yourself a problem. I'm wondering, however, how many people actually complained and whether or not it was just a nervous executive producer or a nervous executive somewhere at ESPN saying, tell Greasy to knock it off, you know, with that spick stuff. All right, 877-876-PHIL. And, of course, I'm being satirical there. Not that anybody would
holy boobs
get it. Here is ESPN now firing Steve Phillips. So we got Greasy with his Mexican jokes, the racist. And now we got ESPN's Steve Phillips fooling around with a 22-year-old production assistant. And he got fired. Steve Phillips is no longer working for ESPN, the network said in a statement. His ability to be an effective representative for ESPN has been significantly and irreparably damaged, and it became evident it was time to part ways. This is less than a week after a newspaper revealed that he'd had an affair with a 22-year-old production assistant while a married man. That's
holy
right.
Boobs.
Now, here is a story from the New York Post reporting about the short affair between Phillips and Brooke Hundley. It became a nationwide story, creating a serious public problem for the network. Before this season, he was elevated from work on a full-time studio as a full-time studio analyst into the Sunday Night Baseball show booth with John Miller and Joe Morgan. Steve Lefkowitz, Phillips's agent, or at least used to be, I got to move on, Steve. Why? Well, you know, I can't get you any work. You're not making me money. Anyway, Steve Lefkowitz, Phillips's agent, said in a statement, Steve Phillips is voluntarily admitting himself to an inpatient treatment facility to address his personal issues.
What's that mean?
It means he's putting himself in a nut house. What the hell is wrong with that? I mean, there is something wrong with that.
Holy boo.
You're putting yourself in a nut house? Why, man? Because you had an affair? It's morally probably reprehensible. I mean, you've got a wife. I don't know if you've got children. She was of age, so it's not anything that a lot of... But you're putting yourself in the nut bin because you had sex with a chick that was 22? Today we define that as insanity? Come on!
Giant douche nozzle.
So in any event... Lefkowitz said that he's in a nut house. I say nut house, I shouldn't say that. Lefkowitz said he informed ESPN on Friday of Phillips' intention. Apparently they said that so he could save his job. ESPN took action against Phillips when it learned of the affair, then announced last week that it had granted him a leave of absence so he could put himself in some place with a bunch of guys sitting around saying, well, I had an affair with a 20... You what? I had an affair with a 22-year-old woman. Uh-huh. What are you doing here? Well, what are you doing wasting my time? Do you understand that I'm a doctor of psychiatry and psychology, that I am an eminent man, I've got a Nobel Prize, I'm working with nuts, I'm working with psychopaths, drug addicts, I'm working with pedophiles, I'm working with, and you're here because of what? Well, I want to keep my gig on Sunday Night Baseball. Get out of here. A letter from Hundley to Phillips' wife, Marnie, which became part of a report filed with the police in Wilton, Connecticut, turned into salacious fodder as this young woman appeared to be stalking Mr. Phillips. When Phillips was the general manager of the Mets, he was forced to take a leave of absence in 1998 because of a series of affairs and an accusation of sexual harassment by a Mets employee at that time, Mookie Wilson. I'm kidding around.
Is that a guy?
He was a player. Yeah, I'm joking.
Oh.
He entered counseling. Is that a guy? He entered counseling and returned to the Mets, but was eventually fired in 2003. So this cat has lost two gigs now as the result of something going on with his libido, man. That's interesting. His name is Steve Phillips, and as I say, he used to be a baseball executive. I just believe that the reason why I put those two stories together is we're rapidly approaching a critical mass here. We're entering an area where there's going to be a backlash of enormous proportions, and that is this. Bob Greasy says the taco line, and it pisses off a bunch of people, and Greasy apologizes for that. Okay. Now, either they're going to not hire people that are that dumb, because Greasy is a former football player, which automatically means that he is suspect behind a microphone. You understand that, see? He can play football very, very well, and he's okay when he sticks to the X's and O's. When you let an idiot like this ad lib, then you got a problem like that. However, I wouldn't have forced the guy to apologize.
Why not?
Because it was an offhand remark that had nothing to do with NASCAR has traditionally been white boy country. American, hillbilly, rum running, whiskey running, still running, white boy sport. Now you got these cats with names like Pablo, Escobar, whatever the hell. And Greasy was probably reacting to that. It wasn't all that bright, but whether or not it was something you had to apologize for, I don't know. Now we got this other guy, Phillips, here. Now, should he be screwing around on his wife? No. Should the man be involved the way that he is with all of these young women, these interns, and whatever else he's doing? No. But should he check himself into the nut bin? I'm not even saying that the ESPN shouldn't fire him, either.
Yeah, you'd think a guy didn't go to a crazy house.
Well, that's basically what he did. He's so afraid of losing his job. He's so frightened to death of losing his stature and standing in the community and in the broadcast industry that he went to them on his knees, begging, pleading. He probably went to them with tears in his eyes, you know, saying, what do I got to do so I can hold on to my job, man? Well, you know, you're not supposed to be. Well, I'll do anything you guys ask me. Anything at all, man. You just go ahead and say it.
Captain Cajones.
I'll do what you want me to do. Well, I tell you what, I got an idea. I'll put myself in a lunatic asylum. How about that? Well, I'll check myself in as an inpatient for whatever the hell the problem I got is, which is what? Liking women? Yeah, all right. So that's what he did out of desperation. He checked himself into a padded room, and 2 days later, ESPN said, not good enough, man, and fired him. So let that be a lesson to anybody out there that's thinking that if you show contrition, man, they're just looking for a way to bounce your ass. You know, you did it, and that's it. You know, there's no way. You weren't that valuable to the organization there, Mr. Phillips, sir. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, and don't forget Twitter with us at twitter.com/ThePhilHenryShow, or Phil Henry Show. That's where you can comment on the show as we're moving through the evening. And you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/PhilHenry. And we've got Bobby Dooley coming up at the top of the hour, and we have Art Griego, a retired charter airline pilot, at the midnight hour, 3 a.m. on the East Coast, talking about this Northwest Air imbroglio. We'll be back, world-famous, groundbreaking Phil Henry Show.
Captain Cajones.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Joining us on our newsmaker line, David G. Hawley. He's the vice president of syndication here for the Phil Henry Show. And David, you saw the article, the interview I did with Al Peterson, right?
I did see that, Phil. It was a great article. And for anybody that wants to know more about the Phil Henry Show and how you do your show and how you've come to make the decisions that you've made over the years and creating your program, people should watch or read this. Al Peterson, in his News Talk newsletter that he publishes once a week. It was terrific. The other interview, of course, is one that was unfortunate, but what we want to focus on is you, and you're going to be going to the talk show boot camp in Atlanta to meet with other professionals, right?
Well, what other interview?
Hold on for a minute. You're going to Atlanta to the talk show boot camp, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be on a panel addressing other hosts, other young hosts who are coming to the business.
See, that's great. So I think the Al Peterson interview you did is terrific. And you going to the talk show boot camp in Atlanta is going to be phenomenal. And like I said, the other, we can just smooth over that. And
what one are you talking about? Because I'm curious. Which one are you talking about?
The one that I'm talking about is the one that you had mentioned off air to Jason and to George, and that you had mentioned to some other people. And so the word of mouth begins to spread. That's why I'm saying if you could just pull the lid on that.
Well, are you talking about the Radio Source Monthly?
Why did you have to? What are you doing? Let me ask you that. What are you doing?
The Radio Source Monthly interview was a good one. It was a guy, Brian Baker, right?
You want to talk about it, huh?
What's not? Why wouldn't I want to talk about that?
Because the guy that did the interview says to Baker, I hear Henry's tough to work with. He's difficult.
Oh, that's... Brian was very nice. He said, no, Phil is not difficult to work with. He puts on a very tough show. He's, you know, he works his rear end off. And that's just a perception that some people have.
But this guy from this magazine was really trying to stick it in and break it off. I mean, and he made you sound like you were Captain Bligh.
I don't think he did.
You don't think he did? I'm the guy that's got to deal with it. You know that, right?
What are you getting phone calls or something?
What I'm telling you is, forget about whether I'm getting phone calls. And I didn't want to have an argument about this on the air.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be contentious, but you're talking about an interview.
You know what? You don't want to be contentious, but you're, if you want me to let your audience in on what was in that article, on what was contained in that smear, then...
It was not a smear, David. It was a simple question the guy put to Brian, and the audience probably doesn't know Brian because he's more of a behind-the-scenes guy. He's a production guy. But he said to him...
No, I know what he said.
I'd like to tell my audience, okay, now that you brought it up.
I brought it up. Boy, does that take a pair. What's that thing? Hey, Bud, is Bud Dickman there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Dude, what's the one that he's got there that I think is pretty funny? He's saying that I got a pair. Listen to this.
Captain Cajones.
Yeah, there you are. Captain Cajones.
That's funny, man. Why don't you leave the drops to me?
Well, are you telling me, in other words, that you think that I'm the guy that brought this up?
Yes, you just brought it up on the show right now.
You were talking to Rance and you were talking to Rodriguez about it.
I wasn't doing it on the air.
They have big mouths. Excuse me for saying, because I know they're listening. But the fact is, this gets around.
Let me just say something. In this article, he's talking to Brian, and Brian said something very nice. The guy in the interview said, you know, what was it like working with Glenn Beck?
There you go. You're mentioning Beck's name again. Boy, you can't get off him, can you?
Do you want me to say what the article was?
Beck. Sound like that Chris, what's his name? But that Beck, you know how he does that? What's the guy's name?
In the article.
Hey, Bud, what's that guy's name?
Yeah, Chris Berman.
Yeah, you sound like that Chris Berman.
In the article, he said, I hear you. Who, you know, did you work with Beck? He said, yes, I worked with Glenn Beck. I think he's a terrific talent, and I worked with his producer. He's one of the best. He paid a high compliment to Glenn's producer. He's one of the greatest. And then he said...
I know what he said.
No, wait. Then he said, of all the people that I didn't work with that I wished I had was Phil Hendry. And a guy who interviewed him said, oh, really? I hear he's difficult. And he went on to say, Brian went on to say, I never found that to be the case at all. I know that Phil concentrates very hard on his show, so he's not the most gregarious guy in the hallway at work. You know, he's always thinking about what he's going to do in the show. He said, but off the air and away from the studio, he's a nice guy.
So there, what are you spending? How much time was that, Bud? Did you time it?
Yeah, about a minute.
So you spent a whole minute there kissing your own rear end. That the audience doesn't want...
You came on the program, man, and you wanted to talk... You said to me...
Look, I came on the show just to say, let's forget about the interview.
Well, that was what was in the interview. It wasn't me kissing my ass. Nobody was kissing my ass. That guy was talking about me.
Well, I don't know.
You don't know.
I'm telling you that you need to concentrate on the good ink and the good press, and don't keep bringing up the bad stuff.
You brought it up. Who's ever heard of Radio Source Monthly, man? You know,
I never mentioned a magazine, and now you just mentioned a magazine.
I don't even know if it's a magazine. It sounds to me like it's a website or something. I don't know what it is.
Well, I'll tell you right now, you know, this stuff gets around, and then people are going to think you're a real prima donna, some kind of guy that you need to have your toenails trimmed, and you have to have your ice cream licked for you first before you taste it, and you need a food taster. You know about that, don't you?
What?
A lot of these guys want food tasters.
I don't... Who?
I'm not at liberty.
Guys on the air.
Yeah.
I will not ever need a food taster.
Well, you may not think you need one. You may not think you want one, but I think maybe you'll need one. Or, I mean, you may not want one. What was I trying to say?
Okay, well, anyway, thanks a lot, David.
You're not going to blow me off while I butchered that line. You may not want one, but you may need one. Yeah, there it is.
Okay, thanks a lot. What is that about?
Something about an article he wrote about you or something.
Yeah, you want me to taste your food?
No, I don't want you to taste my food. No need for a food taster here, okay? 877-876-PHIL. And what is this he says? He just IM'd me. You better make sure your current staff has a clause in their contract to never disparage you after you inevitably fire them. I don't want to reread more of these interviews. So that's great.
Yes, you better put it in a contract.
Bull crap. All right, coming up, we have Bobby Dooley joining us next hour on the swine flu. And you can Twitter at twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show. That's twitter.com/Phil Hendry Show as we progress here through the show. You know what? I don't think Rance or Rodriguez said anything. I think you did.
Well, you wanted me to check in.
You're going back there and blathering everything, man. Forget it, okay? It was a very nice article, and I don't regret mentioning it. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.